Underpants.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mac Show. I'm Jeff Gamet, your Ewan Rankin impersonator. Ewan is locked in the mobile command center, and once he learns his lesson, we'll let him back out. Actually, he's busy today, and he'll be back with us next week. So, Ewan, we miss you, and we're looking forward to seeing you next week. And we have an awesome panel here. We'll just do like I seem to be doing quite regularly now, and just kind of go clockwise from my perspective. Patrice, oh wait, Patrice, I'll introduce you, and then I'll go down my little rabbit hole. Patrice, how are you today?
Okay. Oh, I'm doing really well today. Short day at work, stressful week, but we had our big quarterly planning meeting on Wednesday, so you can imagine there was a lot of work going into that, and then like finishing it. But now we have until October to actually execute it. So that's the fun part. But I'm good. I mean, I had like I said, the stress got to me a little bit beginning of the week, but today is Friday, so good day.
Yeah, so it's a good day. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Okay, my little rabbit hole. I said I'll go clockwise, and after I said that, I realized there's a percentage of the population that doesn't understand what that really means.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't remember when was the last time I've even seen like a traditional clock face. That's been a while.
Yeah, well,
I mean, there are still people that have them. Like I know that, but
I actually have one in my kitchen.
Nice. Oh yeah, the train stations here have them. Now that you mentioned it, I'm like, oh yeah, the train stations here still have them. Yeah, you know, they have those like Swiss clocks, the old ones.
Nice.
They still have them.
So the train stations near you, and my kitchen. That's where we can find the anachronism that is analog clock face.
Yes, exactly.
That's awesome. Yeah. Dave, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being on the show last night. It's going to get published today, and we had a lot of fun. And it's been a long week. I'm back to work since subbing off the pack the week before. So, but glad to be here today.
Awesome. Well, it's great to see you. Thank you. Chuck, how are you doing?
I'm great, Jeff. But speaking of anachronisms, a friend of mine went on vacation, took their daughter with them to a place that was a little, you know, rustic and all, and they had a significant problem with a utility, and they had to call the caretaker, and they sent their daughter to make the phone call, and they had a rotary dial phone on the wall. Wow. She did not know how to use it. She did not know how to, which you know, it just shows you, you know, how far back some of us go, unfortunately.
Oh my gosh, can't believe it still works.
I saw a YouTube video, it was going around several months ago, where these parents set up a rotary phone and asked their teenage kids to make a phone call. And gave them no instructions, just here's the phone, make a call. And they couldn't figure it out. And it was fascinating to watch the video because, you know, they're trying to like make numbers happen on it, but no, they're not actually picking up the handset. And at one point they pick it up and they hear a dial tone, and they're like, I don't know if it's working or if I've got an error because it's making a sound. And yeah.
You know, the only time I've ever used a rotary, I mean, used an air quotes rotary phone was as a toy as a kid. My grandparents still had one. It wasn't connected to anything. I think it was their, literally their old rotary dial phone, but it wasn't connected to anything. But I remember as a kid like playing with it. Pretending it was a phone,
like, or the Fisher Price.
Oh yeah, Yeah, Fisher Price. They taught us all about mobile phones because there's a little cord so you could, yeah, you could pull it around behind you.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you could pull around with the wheels.
No, that was literally it had the cable still and everything. Like, it was like the actual phone, it just wasn't connected anymore.
Yeah. Well, the punchline, like in the
80s or something.
Yeah. Well, the punchline to my story is that the daughter that didn't know how to use it just turned 30.
Wow. So she would have passed the disposal when she was younger.
Well, you would have thought so, but you know, you start doing the math and not necessarily.
All
right. Well, you know, so
she was 80s? Probably exposed to push button phones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Exactly.
That was what I remember. I'm not that much older, so.
No, I do remember that, of course, we called them touch tone phones.
Princess phones too.
The princess phones, yeah.
The princess
phones.
They had the
little switch on them so that you could switch them between tone and pulse styling so that they would simulate a rotary phone for the systems that still required that.
Oh, do you know that? Even modern day desk phones still can do that. Like, especially the business ones, they still have an option where you can switch over.
Unless they're IPT.
Yeah. Really?
Hmm.
Wow. You're on IPT?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Really? And Bob Beach in the chat room saying, has the show started? Well, yes.
Yes and no.
This week in antiquated phone technology, show. Yes, Lord, we're show. Well on the way. And somehow Ewan still lets me host the show.
Well, that one was my fault, Jeff. No, that was my fault, Jeff.
Yeah,
but I ran with it.
Yeah, well, we all.
But I set you up because I started it off with talking about clockwise. So I set us up for old tech. Yeah. But I do stuff like this all the time. And you was like, oh, whatever. I'll let him come back and host again anyhow.
Who's going to bring the punch card?
Yeah.
Oh, don't yeah, next week.
This week at Apple.
and the week after that, the chisel with this, you know, the stone tablets. Yeah. That works. That works.
Yeah. And then the special episode will show people how to make papyrus paper.
Oh. That's nice.
It's going to be awesome. Absolutely awesome. Actually, I do remember, as long as we're not actually talking about what we're supposed to talk about. I remember the first computer that I got to play with, like, you know, like go hands-on and like really do something with, was the Commodore PET 2001, and still has a special place in my heart because I was the first. And that was the upgraded model that had a cassette tape recorder in it. Yep. And I remember the because the computer was in the math department, because back then that's where computers were supposed to be. And so it was back in the teacher's lounge, and one day teacher took me back into the lounge and said, you need to see this. And then I had a special pass so I could go and play on the computer. And one of the first things that he said was, on your cassette tape, you need to note the time markers for all of the different programs that you write, so that you don't have to start from the beginning and just let it play until it finds your thing.
Oh my God.
And you need to make sure that you know how long it is so that you don't accidentally overwrite part of the tape with a different program.
Oh yeah.
So
you know what's interesting, and I only realized that a couple of years ago. The German word for data center is Rechenzentrum, which literally just means calculation center. And that's because, that's where you went with your punch cards or whatever to have them calculate something. So it's like,
yep.
German language, very, very literal.
Very literal. And and it's like the Lego bricks of language. You just take pieces and stick them together.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yes, that's very true. Okay, how did we end up here? Can we stick Apple together?
Yeah.
Well,
does your iPhone do punch cards? I don't know.
You know, there's that guy that does videos where he takes old storage mediums and connects them to an iPhone to see if he can use them. And he got a floppy disk to work with it.
Wow.
So he actually
3.5 or 5.25.
It was 3.25. So the, wait, was it 3.5 and 5.25?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. So it was 3.5. Although I would love to know if he's tried it with the bigger floppies.
So I'm having this vision of someone deciding to take photos of punch cards and then trying to process those photos for the punches.
Yeah,
you know, but put that into a video at so many frames per second, and have it run that way. That would be painful.
But Patrice, I think you're right. You should be able to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, if you can scan a QR code, from a technical standpoint, that's not that much different to scan a punch card.
No, I think it might actually be rather easy because it's a fixed pattern. Like QR codes are much more complicated.
Right. Ewan, we're so sorry for what we've done to the show.
Oh my gosh.
Yesterday, I was throughout the show just randomly issuing apologies. Maybe I should continue to do that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yesterday you'd only started after the introductions, I think. Today we started early.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, we're overachievers. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I guess as long as we're here and no one has found a punch card scanner app for the iPhone yet, we might as well talk about something else Apple related. So let's just jump right into the big OMG story. Apple is including a new feature in iOS 15 and in macOS Monterey that will scan for nude photos to protect kids from seeing inappropriate content. So there's two parts to this. And the first part is if you get, say, a text message from someone and it includes a dick pic, and you are if you're under 17,
but under 13, usually.
There's two thresholds. There's the under 13 threshold and the under 17 threshold for what type of notice happens for parents. But the 13, that's the key one right there, because you get like emojis over the naughty bits and a warning, hey, you know, here's this picture that just came in that's probably inappropriate. And then if the kid's like, screw that, I'm gonna look, and they do, then their parents get a notification. And then from 13 to 17, the parents don't get the notification, but the little don't look at this emoji thing still pops up on the maybe pop up is the wrong word to use there. Still covers the stuff that it thinks you're not supposed to see. Okay, so that's the Apple, first part.
And Apple, I think as well, like it informs the kid why this is a problem or why it is protected.
Right.
So it's not just hiding it, it's also giving information about why this was detected.
Right. So yeah, so there's a little education going on with it too. Then the second part of this is photos uploaded to iCloud Photos are going to be scanned for matches for or against a specific database that has child abuse and great. I just totally forgot the name of the database, but it's like a database that's maintained to try and track and stop child exploitation images.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
My understanding was that's true for all photos uploaded, not just from children.
Yes, okay. That's for all photos yes. that okay. are uploaded, so not just from kids. Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're calling it CSAM, which would be child sexual abuse material is disabled. That was the article mm-hmm. that we didn't share, but yeah, that's what that other, we were going to bring that up, but we only talked about the actual child protection there. But yeah, they're doing this, and this, I think there's already about a lot of people up in arms with privacy concerns mm-hmm. on this, of course. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Bravo to Apple for doing this.
Yeah, I mean, what it does is it checks basically the photos against known hashes. So if someone shared right. something that was already identified, it doesn't identify new material. It just catches what is already known, and the hashes are built into the system. So it's not an online system where stuff can be added. Apple would have to, or I'm guessing, will release basically new hashes as that database makes them available in a new iOS version or an iOS update.
Because mm-hmm. Of course, you know, people are so dumb. They're going to get this material yeah. from pornography sites, somewhere. And you yeah. know those photos have tags in them, and they have mm-hmm. no clue that it does.
Yeah, exactly. I think the concern here is, I mean, this Apple is not the first company to do that. I think, in fact,
Microsoft is almost, already doing it.
Yeah. I think every cloud storage company is doing it. Like Google, Microsoft, Dropbox, I think they're all doing it already. The concern here is all of them are doing it online. So you upload it to storage, the storage provider, whatever it is, Microsoft, doesn't matter. And then they scan it, and then it actually gets flagged. And then in, like, let's say worst case, or I would say best case scenario, if someone has that, it actually gets forwarded to the authorities. So it's not just that they tell you, oh, you have something you shouldn't have. No, they literally inform whatever, the FBI probably in the US. I don't know who's responsible. So the problem here is what the EFF and some others are saying.
Yeah,
that happens on device. And Apple, and that's a very Apple approach to say, oh, everything happens on device, so it's like it's private and all of that. Whereas in reality, once you have a system like that on device, you could use it for anything.
Right. And actually, Apple has already been using this system for years because mm-hmm. they've been using it for face detection so that photos can automatically sort your friends and family for you. And find trees and pets and now granted, that's not the same completely as what Apple is going to be doing now, but that technology has been there and has been in use in some way, and now we're seeing that scope expanded. And Patrice, you're right, there's nothing to say that it won't be expanded in the future. Mm-hmm. And there could be you know, just taking it way out there, there could be government mandates at some point that say all smartphone photos must be monitored for specific types of content, and then if that is found, then it has to be turned over to law enforcement.
Yeah, and I mean, that I think that's the part. I mean, yeah, that the on-device scanning has been in place for a long time. It's the part where the photo actually gets uploaded to Apple and someone reviews it, and then it gets forwarded to authorities. That is the part. And it might not be a problem in the US, but it's for sure a problem in some other countries that are more like restrictive. Mm-hmm. Like China, for example, or like in the Middle East, there are some countries.
So there are a couple.
They could simply mandate that Apple has to add whatever they don't like. I don't know, political things, where they say you can't show, I don't know, the flag of some rebel group or something. I don't know. There's no Star Wars. I don't know.
So there are a couple different things though here. First of all, I mean, I think this is admirable any way you take it, regardless of who is doing it. From the child standpoint, from another standpoint, this sort of addresses to a small degree, you know, some of the arguments that some of the law enforcement agencies have tried to put forth about wanting a back door. You know, that, well, we want to, this is one of their big arguments. We want to protect the children. We want to protect the children. So now Apple's doing something and others are doing something that are specifically as one of the main goals there to help protect children and to stop some of this horrendous behavior. And right away, you know, somebody points out that, well, yeah, there's this other side. And I couldn't help but be reminded when I was reading these articles this morning of the debates over the back door, because it seems like kind of the same thing. There are pros and cons to these technologies. And, you know, where do you set your priorities and who should set the priorities and how can they be abused? And so the back doors, yes, would they give law enforcement the opportunity to catch more child predators? Absolutely, no question. But what do you give up for that? Here, we have a situation where the kids are going to try to be protected, and we're going to try kind of another avenue to identify child predators and people that are trafficking in this material. But what do you give up for it? So I see these technologies personally as not good nor bad. It's how they're applied. Mm-hmm. And the simple thing is that they are a fact of life. And we've got to figure out as society or societies how we're going to use them and what is going to be acceptable and not acceptable from a law enforcement standpoint, from a corporate standpoint, from a corporate liability standpoint. Because, you know, if a photo is automatically uploaded to Apple, does that violate my privacy because the scanning thought it was something questionable? And it's therefore sharing it automatically with Apple to review. I don't think that I like that idea that if I take a picture of something and the algorithm interprets it incorrectly, I can't imagine what that would be, but let's just go with it and say, you know, that goes, and now somebody else is able to see that photo for the sake of law enforcement, or standards enforcement or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. God, then I struggle with that because I admire and absolutely approve of the objective, but I struggle a little bit with, you know, how it's going to potentially impact me and my privacy. Mm-hmm. So we're on this scale, and that's the thing, these articles, depending on who writes them and which side you're quoting, you know, they're painting Apple as good guy, bad guy. The privacy advocates as good guys, bad guys. And I'm not sure that anybody here is a white hat or a black hat. At least there are some definitely white hats and some black hats, but there's an awful big gray in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely have privacy concerns, and I'm concerned about the potential for corporate or government abuse of the technology. But on the other side of that, when I look at what they're doing for the content that can be sent to you unsolicited, you know, someone sends mm-hmm. you what you deem is an inappropriate image that you did not request. Yeah. I like that there's a system that will be in place where parents can help protect their kids. The way that part works is it's part of the whole parental controls thing, and you can't turn it on for someone that's over 17 years old. Yeah. So
I actually I want that kind of to be an option. I think a lot of women would want that, but it's,
and
like
you went right where I'm going it just with hides. That. Yep, I mean it should be available to everyone, mm-hmm. and because my first thought. When I heard about the feature was, oh wow, I know so many women that are going to be so glad that they can turn mm-hmm. this thing on and not have to see all of these dick pics that get sent to them mm-hmm. that they didn't want. And it still just amazes me that there are people out there that think it's okay to send a photo like that without consent. Holy mm-hmm. crap, what is wrong with you? Anyhow, mm-hmm. so not making that an option for everyone to be able to say, hey, look, I want to have this filter thing turned on for the stuff that I get. That seems like a big omission for me, or for me, from Apple, from my perspective. There we go. That was really hard to say. Wow.
But Jeff, isn't it possible, even probable, that option will be given later, that right now this is turned on for two reasons? First of all, the obvious stated reason, to protect children, but also to test the waters a little bit and see kind of what the reaction is, as if they didn't know what the reaction was going to be. You know, I have to wonder if that's not at some point an option that you will be allowed to turn on. And is there an argument? What's the argument against being able to turn it on? What's the argument for me or Patrice or Dave or you to say, I really don't want to see this kind of content? Because we can do that to some degree on social media now, not with these kind of photos, but with certain political content. I can tag, you know, my favorite anti-politician that I never want to hear from or hear about again. Mm-hmm. And I can turn that on, and I've got a pretty good chance of avoiding a lot of it, maybe not all of it, but a lot of it. So what's the argument against turning it on?
Yeah, I can't come up with a good argument against giving everyone the option for turning this on. I suspect you're right that Apple is starting this as a thing for protecting children, because that's probably easier for them to manage, and it's a good way to test how well the feature works before later on, if it works the way they want, rolling it out so that everyone can use it. Yeah, it's...
Well, and I just one last thing. I love the fact that you pointed out that this is not new technology, that we've had this all this time for identifying trees and boats and cats and dogs and whatever. And, you know, it's sitting there. It's just now they're tuning it to something specific. I have no idea what would have happened if you had tried to ask for, if you had a corpus of photos and said breast. I just don't know. Maybe it would have done just fine by identifying those photos. But and somebody out there probably has tried that, and you know, good for you. But you know, the kind of the point is that this is not new technology. It's just being identified as a way to do this, and now the pros and cons and the debates are starting.
You know what I was also thinking about? The poor developers who had to build this, because they have to test it.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
And I'm guessing that wasn't a fun job.
No, can't imagine.
No, because at some point they have to be looking at a lot mm-hmm. of images, and at least some of them mm-hmm. are probably not to their liking.
Let's hope not.
Yeah,
you know, Patrice, something you said there just triggered. There are apps out there. I just had cause to use one, and that's a whole nother story we won't go into, to identify plants, mm-hmm. you know, that you can just take a picture of a plant and this is what kind of plant it is. And, you know, there's, I think, apps out there, I believe, for birds. I'm sure there are probably apps for a lot of things. This is the very same technology. It's mm-hmm. just now we're talking about certain things that people find hot buttons that, you know, now they want to identify. So, yeah, it's the way the world is. It's technology now. Get used to it and figure out a way to use it to your advantage, or at least so it's not a disadvantage.
And avoid it.
When Amazon and Dropbox and Google and Microsoft and all these other companies started scanning the images that people are uploading for inappropriate or illegal content. I don't remember hearing this big public backlash to those companies doing that. Did I just miss that?
I don't remember it. It might have happened. Yeah.
But Jeff, I don't remember either. But you know what? I don't think anybody thought about it. And we've had this conversation here on this show and on other shows, the very same way that we all very innocently shared our contact lists with Facebook and other social places because, yeah, you know, I'm on Platform X and I want to talk to Jeff on Platform X. So I want Platform X to know that he's in my contacts. And we didn't understand what we were giving away mm-hmm. or what uses that could be put to. So I don't think there was that backlash. I think people saw storage, convenience, access. Great, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I had that discussion on Twitter about, what was it, Clubhouse, I think. Mm-hmm. many other apps is uploading the photos, I think, the phone numbers. And wasn't there even a leak recently? I think that was what happened.
Yeah,
leak in air quotes. Right. I mean, it was just phone numbers, like nothing else, just phone numbers. But the reality in this case was there was no other way to do it. If you want to identify someone in someone else's contacts that he is connected to you, then the only way to do that is to upload all your phone numbers. They were smart enough to not connect it to anything else. So that was the good part. And phone numbers are like easy to guess. So.
Yeah, when Clubhouse hit the point during the setup where it wanted to upload my contacts, I told it no, because I just always tell every service no. Mm-hmm. And of course, it kept pushing me, hey, you know, if you want to be able to really take advantage of Clubhouse, you need to give us this. And I said no. And eventually it let me through the process without uploading my contacts, to the best of my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is that it's difficult to find discoverability on Clubhouse is very hobbled if they don't have your entire address book.
Yeah. As I said, and in this case, they don't upload the address book. They literally just upload the phone numbers. So all the, as I said, that was a pretty smart decision, but I was even questioning that. And like, I was like told on Twitter and I thought about it and it's true. There's simply no way to improve that security wise, because anything you do can be reversed because phone numbers are easy to guess.
Mm-hmm.
So the phone number without any other context is useless.
Yeah, I still didn't do it.
Yeah.
I didn't do it, but they somehow were able to send invites to my friends that were in my address book. So I got very fed up with that and deleted my account. So
I haven't used Clubhouse since. So.
Yeah.
And I never signed up for Clubhouse for this very reason, that you know, there were too many stories coming out that seemed to be just coincidentally, they're connecting me with somebody and they really should know that I know that person. How do they know that? And, you know, the obvious conclusion is that they probably took your contacts, whether you allowed it or not. So,
yeah.
I mean, on iPhone, you did allow it because they wouldn't have access to it otherwise. That is one of the big features, like on iOS.
Right.
It blocks access.
I may not have realized it, but then when it got to that point, like Jeff did with stopping the contacts, I said no. And they sent invites to friends anyway, because I got like kind of bothered. And one of my coworkers said, hey, you do this Clubhouse? And like, wow, what do you mean? You sent me an invite. Oh, no, I didn't do that.
Yeah. Well, despite the whole contact issue that they have, I found in general Clubhouse is kind of a
boring.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a way to say it that would save you clean. From having to edit.
By the way, David.
Yeah, David, it's a big crap storm.
Yeah. What most likely happened in your case was they had your phone number in their contacts, and Clubhouse knew that.
Yeah, must have been.
So that's probably it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
There's always two sides. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still, so, yeah, I don't like that policy.
It's an echo chamber.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. I can understand, like, from a technical perspective, I can totally understand it, why they did it that way, and it made sense. And they did it in the best way possible. There simply wasn't any other way to do it properly. So, yeah. Doesn't mean it's good.
Nope.
All right. Well, let's talk about something a little more lighthearted. And let's talk about the Apple Store redesign on their webpage.
Finally.
Okay, so earlier this week, the Apple Store went offline because Apple still is doing their own in-house coded system instead of using a proper CMS. So the website went down. When it came back up, there was now a tab on the homepage for the store, because holy crap, why did they ever take that away in the first place? And then the landing page for the store was redesigned. Also, the new keyboard of Touch ID was available as a standalone product. But hey, site redesign. So what do you think?
People got super, super excited when the website went down, because they were thinking there's some new products coming out. But I like the design. I think it's nice, but, and we talked about this yesterday, I think this, it is designed almost like for touchscreen, because you have to swipe with your mouse or your trackpad to move across the different items and look at stuff. Whereas before you could just click. It doesn't bother me, but
you can still click.
And you
still a little like arrow thingy that you can click.
Yeah.
Yeah. But my take on it, which I shared on In Touch with iOS last night, was I think it looks pretty, but it's a horrible design. Absolutely horrible. Because if they designed it properly for a desktop device, which is what this is for, then it would be optimized for vertical scrolling, but it's designed for horizontal scrolling, which works better when you're doing a touch interface, because it's natural to swipe left and right. And this is an interface that is designed for touch, not for using a mouse pointer.
Which, I mean, if you think about it, probably is not too bad. I mean, how many people, I'm pretty sure a lot of people on iPads or iPhones go to the Apple Store on the website not knowing that there's an app. I bet that's
true. But those people were already getting a touch interface.
Yeah, ish.
Ish.
I agree with you. The design is not great. I mean, I don't have a it's a combination of horizontal and vertical, and I'm okay with that. And I think overall it looks good, and it's like clearly structured.
It does look
good. My big problem with it is there is a massive like white space on the left-hand side. That is completely unused.
Yep, that really annoys me.
For no reason whatsoever, because on the right-hand side, it scrolls to the right. So why not use the full screen? Like, why not use the full width of the window?
Right, yep.
That makes no sense.
Good point.
Yep.
So,
yep.
I hadn't even thought about that. But
that I don't get. I'm like, I mean, you're scrolling to the right anyway. So why, like, just make it wider. Yeah.
Just like the big blank bar on the left.
Yeah.
Yep.
For nothing. Like, it even gets like when you like resize it, it even gets back bigger.
I like the design. I like the fact that it's clean. It's bright. You know, it's very appealing. I mean, first of all, Jeff, I'm with you. Why did they ever take the store tab away? That made no sense. Mm-hmm. But it's there's so many messages they're trying to deliver on this site. And this seems to be a tendency right now with so many websites that I don't feel like the navigation and the access to the content is as easy as it could be. Now, this is a store site, and Apple has a kind of a limited categorization of their products, which is definitely a good thing. But if I want to go and try to find a cable, let's say, for my iPhone to charge it, it becomes a little more, just a little more problematic. Not impossible, but a little more problematic. And while a CNN news style site with just a lot of text links is probably not the answer, I'm not smart enough to know what it is, but I know I'm fighting this battle in a couple different projects, trying to figure out how to make things easy to find, easy to use, with the hierarchical menu structure of if you had a map of the website. You know, I feel like, okay, here, iPhone, great, click iPhone. Now I drop down to, you know, the multiple models of iPhone, click one of those models, and now I can see what the colors and the memory configurations and prices are. Yeah, that's multiple clicks, but it feels like I can get to where I want to go faster and easier and better, as opposed to trying to put it all right up here up front. Mm-hmm. And that's the other, I mean, I like it, but I recognize it has challenges that, you know, seem to be epidemic right now in modern versions of the web and modern versions of CMSs.
Yeah, I think that's you're right. That's the other problem. There's just too much. I mean, if you open the site and you look at it, there's just too much going on. The navigation almost disappears because there's so much else. Like, there's colors everywhere, and there's like bold text, and like and you almost lose that there is actually a way to go to like a special certain device. I'm guessing that's on purpose, but I'm not sure that makes sense.
Well, I'm sure whatever they're doing is on purpose, and they have a reason for it. Whether or not it's effective, well, if we see a radical change in the site design in a few weeks, we know it wasn't effective. But you know, when you look at the other end of that spectrum, you have sites like Amazon, where it is just product chaos all the time, everywhere, and yet they sell an insane amount of stuff every single day.
So, Jeff, you're a design guy, so I'm really curious, is this too much white space?
It's way too much white space. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Dave pointing out the bar on the left. That's wasted space, and it looks weird, and that, I mean, there's no point for that. And then when I don't remember if it was Dave or Patrice said, when you resize your window, that that white space, it gets bigger.
Yeah.
So it's wasting even more space.
Yeah. I said, I mean, I'm by no means a UX designer, but I know, I've worked with a lot of them, and I know some principles. And honestly, this, as I said, it's just pulling focus everywhere. It's complete chaos. I mean, when you said Amazon is actually, I mean, it has a lot of white space. Also too much, in my opinion, but it's, what it services is relatively clear. Like you like there's a categories, there's like certain things they want to promote, but it's limited. And I don't get that here. I said there's like, I don't know how many, it feels like 500 different colors used here, because every product has then 4, 5, 10 different colors.
Yeah. But then the rest of the Apple Store website, as far as I can tell, is unchanged. So it's only the landing page for the store that they made any changes to. Still,
no,
I guess
that's not true. If you, for example, go onto the Buy Mac page, that has also the new design. It's not the old design where you had the, like, I don't know how to explain it. Basically, the model side by side and underneath each other and whatever. It has changed.
I'm going to look right now. Oh, yeah, you're just... right. You're right. It's, it has changed.
I was thinking when you went to the particular model and like in the case, like a MacBook Air, that does look the same that it used to be.
Oh yeah, you're right. Like when you go another level, then you're back at the same thing. Okay.
Right. Yep. Well, there you go. But hey, again, at least there's a store tab again.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Jeff, there's a word that I've been running into in the last 2 weeks about a lot of different things, and that's friction. And I feel like, you know, that was a, there was a friction point here trying, okay, I'm interested in a new MacBook Pro. So, and I click it, great. And if I miss that little tab up there that says buy now or buy here or whatever it did say, you know, then what do I do with it? How do I get to it? Now, store, no question. I know what I'm there for. And I like that. That cuts down on the friction.
Yep. Now, I'm wondering if part of the reason behind creating that friction in the first place was wanting to drive people to the Apple Store app on mobile devices.
Not too sure. I think the thinking was more that they wanted to drive people to the like to the device pages that they have that are beautiful. Like every like the Mac page is beautiful, and every page is special design and everything. And they were hoping people would simply go, "Oh, I want a Mac. Click on the Mac and get the beautiful Mac sites." And then they would select the Mac and then click buy. And what they realized is that a lot of people already know what they want to buy, and it's a lot of friction to go through all those pages just to get to the buy button.
Yeah, actually, that does make sense.
It just goes to show you right here, just this little discussion, how difficult it is because you're trying to create a page for different audiences. Yeah, the audience that doesn't know and they're not sure, or the audience that knows what they want and now has to decide on specifications. Yeah, it's not an admirable challenge.
Nope. All right. So how about one more story before we get on to sponsors and cool things? And let's talk about how crappy the HomePod is doing in the smart speaker space. There's a study out from Consumer Research Intelligence Partners, and they're showing that that the Amazon Echo product line has the lion's share of the smart speaker market. Then you have Google, and then at the very bottom of the list with an inconsequential percentage of the smart speaker space is all of HomePod.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not so sure this is a very reasonable way of approaching it. I mean, you're comparing devices that Amazon frequently gives away or sells for basically nothing with like higher priced devices. And that's, I mean, a very much skewed like viewpoint. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I also have to say, honestly, my personal opinion, Apple has been asleep in the speaker market. Because they put out the HomePod and then didn't do much with it. Like they added like a feature here, a feature there, but mostly did nothing with it. And then they had the HomePod Mini. And was there any big change this year in the HomePod Mini? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Like
no,
minor
we're still
little
on the OG HomePod
things.
Mini.
Yeah, I mean, not even talking hardware, software. Like there's massive potential in software. There's so many things they could be doing. And I think other than using it as a relay for Siri on other devices, I don't remember much.
That's the big new thing coming to HomePod Mini this fall.
Yeah. It's like big. Like, okay, like what are we doing?
Yeah, that just doesn't seem exciting.
No.
Doesn't seem exciting. And then a very high-priced HomePod when it came and hit the market, you know, not a lot of people were in the budget to be able to buy those. And they discontinue it. So that kind of put things in the perspective of people. Okay, you know, you're abandoning all these people, including myself, and many, I'm sure all of us here that have the HomePods. the HomePod, the full-size HomePod, and I'm hoping they continue to support it for the next few years. I mean, of course, it's a technology item. I don't expect it to be forever. But then the HomePod Mini comes out, and here you go. It was cool at the time. I'm sure I know a lot of people are buying it. It was really reasonably priced, but like you said, you're right. I mean, they haven't really done much of anything with the HomePod in general. It's kind of a shame. There's so much software potential. I mean, look at what the Echo does. Look at what the Google device does. I mean, there's so many other things that both those devices do that the HomePod doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking about that yesterday. I was listening to podcasts, and I like Castro. And it's a pain. I mean, really a pain to use Castro with a HomePod. I mean, pain in air quotes. It's still not super difficult. Like, you just use AirPlay. But there's basically no control. There's nothing. Like, it's basically I need my phone to do anything with it. I mean, I think I can do play pause with Siri, and that's about it.
Yeah.
I can't even tell it, hey, play this podcast from, play my next podcast from Castro, because then it's going to use the podcast app. Right. It's like
very so
and Amazon has had skills for I don't know how long, like years.
Yeah. I mean, I've had an Amazon Echo since it came out, and it's those skills are cool. I mean, they're fun to set up, and you know, there's all kinds of different skills you can do, and Apple hasn't done any of that stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, Siri has improved, yes, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Well, that to me, Patrice, is what I was going to say. Siri is definitely improving, and Apple is not letting people know how much it's improving. And I think that's a failure of communication, because I use this example, and this has been months ago, when there was a particular historical figure that I wanted to know more about. And I ask Alexa and the A-Lady, sorry, folks. I ask the A-Lady, and it gave me something. Then I ask Siri, and it gave me as much or more. And a lot of it was overlap, but that's fine. You know, but I had expected Siri to say, I can show you
phone.
Right. Or I can show you something on the web. But instead, it gave me what I wanted. So I think there's that. Patrice, I agree with you 100% on the pricing piece. I think that definitely skews this. But I'm really intrigued by what both of you said about skills, because I turned off, I think I sent it to my black hole, that constant email of, we have new skills, because they were skills that were not doing anything for me. And so I want to know what skills you two have found that were useful and not just completely frivolous, that are worth my time to set up and pay attention to.
I'll tell you the one I use a lot is I use the Odyssey app. That's the radio, formerly radio.com, and you had to have a skill available. And boy, it was a pain when they switched, because they convert, it was a mass conversion between radio.com and Odyssey. And the station I listen to all the time, I say, hey, I want to listen to this station, stop working, or it just wouldn't work right. So it took them time to finally fix it. But that's just one example of a few others that I would do, that I would have as far as skills, that it really does a good job of being able to get things working. I use it with TuneIn, and I use it with iHeartRadio, and mostly media type stuff. But there's thousands of skills. If you go into that catalog, it's crazy. There's a lot of silly stuff by all means. But I mean, even they have if you want to have the thunderstorm sounds and such to help go to sleep and that kind of stuff, they have all those kind of skills. But you should take another look. I mean, I find it interesting looking through the catalog of skills and what they have. And there might be something of interest to you. I don't know when the last time you've looked, but those are just notably some of the things that I've been using it for. I mean, I have one in my bathroom because, I'm taking a shower. I'll be able to listen to some. So I say, hey lady, I want to listen to this, and it's there. So, and any other place in the house that I have, I'm a mixed household, because I do have some Google devices. I mean, I have all three because I'm crazy, of course. I have a Google Home sitting in front of me here, and I use that from time to time. It's got a nice small screen. Sometimes I want to move a video I want to watch sitting next to me. So I put it on there. And then of course the HomePods are here. So it really, I think the skills are something you should look. You should relook at. I mean, I think there are some really good ones that make it valuable if you use the Echo as much as I do.
Okay. I have the Amazon devices, and I like them for what I use them for, but I just got burned out on, you know, tell me a joke, play me a song, tell me a riddle, you know, tell me what color the sky is going to be tomorrow.
There's so many others.
BTN has one. Like, we have the news show. That's a skill.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell it to play the latest news show. Does that.
Did you write that?
No, it wasn't me. I've maintained it, but I haven't written it.
Okay.
It was Camps, I think.
Yeah. Okay. If, so if you have smart home devices and you want to control those with your Echo, there are skills for all those things. And actually, some smart home devices won't have HomeKit or S-Lady support. So, you know, those are all relegated off to the A-Lady for me, like my D-Bot vacuum robot. I can just tell the A-Lady to start cleaning the living room or whatever, and the robot will go do its thing. But the company that makes that, they never added in support for Apple products, other than an app that you can use on your phone.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have the Ekobee smart thermostat, and that's a Echo device too. So I walk up to that and I want to say, Hey lady, I want to listen to this. And it's sitting in my living room. I got rid of it. I had Echo sitting on my, on one of the side tables in my living room. I'm like, what do I need this for? I got this right here. And it actually sounds pretty good considering it's being a thermostat mounted to the wall. So, that itself was another reason I kind of like to have that. Because again, that, the Ekobee has limited home, but it does have HomeKit support. It does.
Good HomeKit support.
Like, yeah, they do have good HomeKit. They have both. So it goes both ways. But you aren't going to get a smart speaker access with that device. An example of that. But again, I think skills there are some skills of value, and there's some that are very dumb.
Yeah. But Bob Beach is saying, I wish the HomePod would play BBC radio natively like the Echo devices.
Yeah,
because he can't be bothered airplaying it from the BBC Sounds app. He just uses Alexa. And that's exactly the point. Like, people just are going where it's easier, and Alexa, in this case, much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's a big gap there.
That's the big point of this article. And I think Bob hit it right on the nail on the head here. That's a reason why Apple has not done a very good job with the device itself is awesome. But it's just what content it provides is not.
And he asked the question, does Apple really care about this market? And I mean, I think they do, because otherwise they would have never done the Mini. They would have said, okay, HomePod was a one-off thing. We're not doing that anymore. Done. Like, or just let it die. Like, not talk about it even. Just let it die. They didn't do
that. Well, just like the iPod Hi-Fi, right? When they had that failed device that Steve Jobs said that this is the most amazing thing in the world. I'm going to get rid of my home theater. Well, look what happened there.
Yeah.
And it's really surprising because
get rid of his home theater.
But it's really surprising that Apple, with all the focus on Apple Music and everything, I mean, it's one of those things. It's almost like they can't. It's in their DNA, but they can't quite figure it out. Like the iPod Hi-Fi, you know, it was a great idea. It wasn't well executed. Definitely not followed up on. The HomePod, the full size HomePod, was brilliant, regardless of the pricing, but it really wasn't followed up on until the Mini.
Yeah.
And the Mini represents some compromises, but like we've been saying, you know, there's not been a lot of follow-up with that.
And example of the Apple Music can be used on the Echo. You could set it up as a skill, and then it makes that your default music source, but along with everything else, then, you know, with Spotify and Amazon Music and any other thing you want to set it to. So Apple's opened up that part of it because Apple Music is available on a lot of other devices, but not making it very easy.
The irony for me is that there are many times where it's actually much easier for me to get an Echo to play my Apple Music than a HomePod. Because I'll say something, you know, like, hey, S-Lady, play you know, like some specific artist, and it'll come back and say they're that's not available, can't find that. Then I'll tell the Echo the exact same thing, and then you just add to the end on Apple Music so that it knows that's the service I want to use, and it immediately starts playing exactly what I asked for.
Yeah, that's the ultimate irony.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. All right, so I guess what we've established is Apple really has a lot of work to do.
They do.
In the smart speaker space. Mm-hmm. Which is frustrating because, they're making good products. They just need to pull it all together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, this show and all the others is sponsored by TSO Hosts, which is absolutely awesome, because if TSO Host wasn't here for us, that means we wouldn't be here for you. So they're giving us the bandwidth we need to crank out quality products or shows to you every single week, and give me the opportunity to apologize live on the internet to you and on a regular basis. You and I'm so sorry. But they also give us that storage space we need so that you can go back and watch or listen to shows at your convenience if you don't have the opportunity to tune in live. So we're really happy that they're here for us. And when we say we wouldn't be here without them, that is not hyperbole. We literally would not be here without them. So we really appreciate TSO Hosts, and they will give you, some discounts for being a BTN fan. If you need web hosting, or if you need to have, or need to buy a new domain, just go to their website and you can use the discount code BTN20 to get a discount on your purchases. So thanks for doing that. That's actually awesome. But what they'd like from us is to go and hit social media, give them a shout out, and thank them for sponsoring the British Tech Network, because you know, we live in pretty stressful times. So a little bit of validation every now and then to feel good about ourselves is a good thing. So help TSO Hosts feel good about themselves. And since you're doing something nice, you'll feel good about you, which is just a win for everyone. So go do that. IMN Max is also our sponsor, and they do so much awesome work to fix your Apple gear that clearly they're crazy busy doing that, because Callum isn't here with us today. I'm assuming he is locked away in his little Callum room, where he does his Callum magic, where he has his Callum Touch to fix your Apple kit for you.
Except cloth.
Except for the cloth parts. Yeah, yes, you're on your own for that.
No, he's that's probably what he's working on right now. He's trying to get over his cloth phobia. So
so that he can fix even more for us. Yeah. And there are several people that are part of IMN Max, and they're all fantastic, but Callum is like our personal IMN Max, because he's on the show quite regularly.
I love the idea of a Callum room. I just like that.
I know, isn't that awesome?
Me too.
Callum room. Yeah, I like that.
Everybody should have one.
Everyone should. Yeah. All of your Apple gear would work so much better if you had a Callum room.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll take and fix just the part that's screwed up on your Apple device, instead of like just pitching the entire logic board and putting a new one in, which is great, because that means you get your device back, but it also means that there's less waste going into landfills. So that's pretty awesome. They'll also sell you Apple gear if you need that, or lease it if that's the route that's best for you. And they're just absolutely awesome people. So take your Apple gear to IMN Max to get it fixed, and mention British Tech Network so that they'll give you a discount. And make sure that they know that you want your gear fixed in the Callum room. Thank you to TSO Host. Thank you to Iman Max for being our sponsors. And now I'm going to hit you up for money because the Daily Show needs some cash to keep going. The cash reserve for that show is getting low. So head over to the British Tech Network website and give some money to the show, because that's the show that we have to pay to make happen. And without money, that means it won't be happening. And it's a really cool show. So go give money and keep the Daily Show running. All right. Since I have clearly decided that I'm just not going to ever bother learning the links for the chat room and stuff, Patrice, I am just simply going to lean on you for that.
Well, that is really easy. Take your browser of choice, whatever it is. I mentioned yesterday, I don't know, but Netscape One might still work. I haven't tried it. I would say take a modern browser of choice. Point it over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat and then navigate to the 6th of August, 2021. That's right, that's the year, yeah, 2021. And you will find everything we've talked about, all the awesome stuff in the chat room and all our links.
Awesome. Thank you for putting up with me because I just lean on you every single week for that. All right. So it's time for the cool things. And Patrice, let's start with you.
Yeah. So my cool thing is something I could not find the exact same product in other stores, but it's the general thing. Those are NFC stickers. The ones I put in at least are available in the US and UK. These ones here, I just couldn't find anywhere else other than in Germany. But the cool thing about these NFC stickers is that you can combine them with shortcuts on the iPhone, and that allows you to trigger whatever shortcut you want. So that was something, I mean, I've been creating shortcuts for a lot of things, but I wanted an easy way to trigger them, especially in certain situations. Like I'm sitting here podcasting, I just want to, like I've set up a podcast focus mode, but I don't want to go into my iPhone and then trigger it by hand and all of that. I just want like to tap my phone somewhere or put my phone somewhere and it just does it. And that's where those things come in. I got the color-coded ones. There are like a million gazillion white ones. So like just buy, probably doesn't matter which ones you get. They all kind of work the same. And combine that with an automation and shortcuts, and you can trigger whatever scenes, whatever shortcut, whatever you want, really. And that's my cool thing. Also shortcuts, but.
And that's very cool.
Yeah. By the way, this one is my podcast one. I haven't stuck it anywhere yet because if you put it on metal, it doesn't work, obviously. So I have to find a place for it.
Right. Yeah. And. Now you have reminded me that the envelope full of NFC stickers that I have needs to come out of the drawer because I got it specifically to do exactly what you're doing.
Yeah. They're awesome. Having so much fun with that.
All right, Dave, what's your cool thing?
My cool thing is this awesome monitor I just got a week ago. It's the 32-inch Samsung UHC. It's a 4K and HD monitor, 32 inches. It's just massive. I've never owned a large screen until now. The color is just sharp, crisp. It's fitting on my desk nicely. Using it right now, looking at you guys right now, and it's nice to be able to put all kinds of windows scattered everywhere and nothing's blocked. So I'm pretty happy with that. Couple of the unique things is again is the wide screen UHD, but it has a lot of upscaling, 4K for gaming. But one thing I really like is the multitasking part of it. It does a picture by picture. So whereas I have my Mac Mini and a MacBook Pro plugged into the two individual HDMI ports, I put it in this picture by picture mode. And I have access to both computers in a half screen. So I can do multitasking. We even talked about this yesterday. I thought that maybe this would be a good idea when I can have an iPad on one of the sources and the Mac on the other, and I can probably use the handoff mode, or what was it called, the new mode that's going to be in Monterey, that I could drag things between the two screens that's sitting right on this 32-inch screen. But really, really sharp picture. I'm really impressed with it. It's not too terribly expensive for a 32-inch, $349 US, and yeah, I think it's really cool. The bezel's not bad. Doesn't bother me too much, and I'm glad I have it. I upgraded it from an old Apple Thunderbolt 27-inch, so quite a difference.
Awesome. All right. So the first link I'm dropping into the chat, I'm putting that there specifically for you, Chuck. This was my cool thing yesterday on the big show, and it's a set of speaker stands. And I'm dropping it there for you because you have the Audio Engine A5s on your desk behind you, and I have Audio Engine A5s on these speaker stands, and it freed up so much space on my desk. I guess what I'm saying is I felt like I needed to spend a little money for you. So you're welcome.
Thanks.
Pretty awesome. But my actual pick today is iMazing, because they rolled out a new update this week that adds in a way to check your iPhone or iPad for the Pegasus malware. And now, granted, none of us have Pegasus on our devices, but the fact that they did an update where they were able to very quickly roll that feature in makes a tool that's already useful even more so. And the Pegasus checker part is available in the free version of iMazing as well. So now you can do all of your backups the way you really want, and manage your data on your iPhones and iPads the way you really want, and check for Pegasus. And I'm betting that this is just the start, and I have no insider information. I'm just speculating that they're going to add in the ability to check for other malware threats as those come up too. All right. Thank you to all three of you for being here today, and Patrice,
you forgot his pick.
Oh wait, yeah, Chuck. That's funny. Wait, Chuck, you're still
you skipped
here.
Him.
I'm sorry.
You were too busy spending my money to allow me to do a pick.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. In my defense, I have not had my tea yet today.
Okay.
And also, Chuck, it's so great to have you on the show today. Glad you could join us. Yeah. Okay. Chuck, what do you have?
Okay, so David just gushed about his monitor, and my pick was inspired by a conversation that we had earlier this week on Mac Voices Live. Those shows will be out next week. But we talked about Dave's monitor, Jeff's monitor, Jim Ray's monitor, and not only big monitors, but multiple monitors. That pushed me back to go and relook at something that I've been using in a very limited, now I find out, limited capacity. And that's a utility for many tricks called Moom. This lets you manage your windows on any size monitor, on multiple monitors, in ways that I find I've been doing, but I've been doing by hand. And now I'm starting to examine some of the advanced capabilities of Moom, and I'm loving it. Just in the last week, I mean, I'm not going to tell you I've changed exactly how I work with multiple windows in multiple monitors, but it has definitely caused me to re-examine it and do some shortcuts and things, not capital S shortcuts, but Moom capabilities, Moom things that let you arrange your windows. So if you have big monitors or small monitors, you want to do a little better management of your windows, check out Moom, and be sure to, you know, dig a little bit deeper than just the basics, because I've been using the basics, and the basics are phenomenal, but the advanced things that the other capabilities, it may take you a little while to set up. It may take you a little while to figure out exactly how you want to use it. But I think you will find it very, very rewarding.
Boom is very cool.
Spent $10 for me.
Well, Jeff spent $99 for me, so I think. So
I really like those speaker stands.
Yeah, they look cool. I love the speaker stands I got from Audio Engine, but you're right, they do take up desktop space, so I may have to look into these.
Awesome. Okay. Well, now that we've gone through everyone's pick, including our surprise special guest, Chuck Joyner. Sorry about that, Chuck.
No problem.
Thanks to all three of you, including Chuck, for being here today. I'm so glad you're able to just hop in at the end and just, it's like you were here the whole time.
Yeah.
So thank you to all three of you for being here. You're absolutely awesome. Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, every week here on the Mac Show every Friday, on the Big Show every Thursday with also Jeff. So we see each other twice a week, which is twice as awesome. So
yes, it is. That.
You can find everything I'm doing, all the projects and social media links, and if you want to buy me a coffee and all of that, on thepatrice.com. Just easier as brandonmoore.net, where it redirects to. And my podcast is the Foodie Flashback at foodieflashback.com, where I talk to awesome people like Chuck, like David, and like Jeff about food and just everything that goes with that.
Awesome. And thank you for being the European on the show today. So yes. That it's not just the American Tech Network this week.
The American Austrian Tech Network. Okay.
That's right. Yep. Dave, where can people find you?
Find me at In Touch with iOS, intouchwithios.com. Got a new episode coming out with Jeff this week, and always have a blast with him. And I'm also here in the Mac Show. I'm on Mac Voices Live on Tuesday nights, hanging out with many of you all and talking about kinds of fun things. My YouTube page is youtube.com/DaveG65, and Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at DaveG65. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks. And Chuck, where can people find you?
You can find me over at macvoices.com. That's where you get to see all the people I talk to. You can find me Tuesday nights, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, whatever time it is, wherever you are, on YouTube at MacVoices TV. We do a live show there. Would love to have you join in the chat. And on the socials, pretty much all of them, I'm at Chuck Joyner. Thanks, Jeff. A lot of fun as always.
It's a blast. So thanks. All right. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I am jgamut both places. YouTube.com/jgamut for my how-to and review videos. And most Tuesdays on Mac Voices Live, this week on In Touch with iOS, Thursdays on The Big Show, Fridays on The Mac Show, and other shows along the way too. I kind of get around. So thanks again to the three of you for being here with me today. And I presume Ewan will be back next week because I won't. I'm gone all next week, so I won't be on anyone's show, which is going to be kind of weird. Thanks to all of you that are watching right now and are in the chat room. All of you absolutely rock. And thanks to everyone that is watching or listening to the recordings later on. Love every one of you too. It's great to have everyone in as part of this. Just so much fun. So thanks again, everyone. Have an awesome weekend, and we'll see you again next week.